Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel, featuring King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. I'm coming at you live from the Republic of Texas. I am your host, Rick Barrett. This is a call-in show, and as such, you have a number that you could call. It is 844-527-8723. You dial that number, you get on this phone, you talk to me, and we can talk about the issues of the day. If you're not into phones, if you're more of a tech kind of person, or you just don't like speaking on the phone, I know there's depending on the person, I don't like doing that either. You can send me an electronic mail at barrettbrief@gmail.com to spell it barrettbrief@gmail.com. You can also find me on various social media platforms, the Twitter at Barrett Brief, same thing, or at Broadcasting Barrett. That is my personal one. I can also be found on gab.ai. That is at Broadcasting Barrett. And if you like them pictures, you can find me on the Instagram at RTB_2. Also, you can find me, if you still believe in Facebook and you use it, you can find me at facebook.com/BarrettBrief. Once you like that page, you can send me messages during the show and we can go back and forth on some stuff and talk about it. If you're just, you know, if you don't like making phone calls, or maybe if you're at work and you can't get away, but you just really want to tell me how terrible my opinion is on something, I'll be more than happy to take your email or your various instant message forms. I want to make an announcement at the top of the show. I did try to get Mark Noonan on right now, but I'm having issues with my stuff. I have a MacBook Air that I run everything through. And this morning, my MacBook Air decided to do this really awesome thing, which is just die. It just looked at me and it was like, hey, man, peace out. And like, it was the worst death scene ever, like worse than The Dark Knight Returns with the lady when she just died. This thing just totally did that. So I'm going to have Mark on tomorrow. He's been very gracious. He's going to be on with me tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel. While I attempt to do CPR, I'm going to call Rick Santorum and maybe he can help me do some CPR on the MacBook Air to bring it back to life. If not, then you'll see me MacGyver away into this. So I want to thank Mark Noonan again for agreeing to be on my show. He's the co-author of The Worst President Ever, The Legacy of Barack Obama. I'm going to have him on tomorrow. And we're going to go back and forth on how Catholics, because he's a fellow Catholic, how Catholics we should view Trump post omnibus bill and so forth. So I know I had him scheduled for today. Not a problem. He's been great. He'll be on tomorrow. So let's get into it. The virtue of the week is justice. And it says, good will come to him who is generous and lends freely, who conducts his affairs with justice. Surely he will never be shaken. A righteous man will be remembered forever. He will have no fear of bad news. His heart is steadfast, trusting in the Lord. His heart is secure. He will have no fear. In the end, he will look in triumph on his foes. That's from Psalms 112, 5 through 8. And when we look at that, when we take that idea and we try to apply it to our lives, many might believe that applying the concepts of justice in modern time is limited to those who work in the criminal justice system. But that is not the case. Modern knights living in virtually any life situation can work to uphold justice. Ethically practicing justice in all things, great and small, should be important to your life because they are important to God. It does not matter if you are lobbying to create or uphold laws that are just, or you're just dividing up cookies between your kids. For God desires each of us to apply justice within our spheres of influence and within the race he calls us to run. So when we look at things like justice, the first two stats that we have to always address at the beginning of the brief is the number of abortions so far, which worldwide is 51,197 babies who have been murdered today worldwide. 51,000. Well, I'm sorry. It actually jumped up in that time I was speaking to you. Now it's 51,211. That is the rate at which it increases. It's not a stagnant number. Now it's 220. That is the amount of babies who are being murdered every day. Their justice has not been seeked. Their justice has not been served. They've been given a sentence that they don't deserve and didn't get a say on. So we must always speak for them. Their justice is for us to try and stop this greatest genocide that is taking place here in the world today. The second statistic that needs to be at least spoken about, and justice will come to it in one way or form eventually, either us or our grandkids or our great-grandkids. And that's the national debt that we have. According to usdebtclock.org, our national debt right now is $21,047,847,000,000. Now, that is a debt that is based on greed, sloth, laziness, entitlement, and just a lack of care or love for the future, for your kids, the ones that don't get aborted, the ones that don't get killed, ones that are not part of the 9,571,340 that have been murdered just in 2018 alone. But those who do survive will have to face this debt. Once again, I say that it is not, we can have this conversation and we can let people know what is happening. Don't approach it from an angle of, well, we're going to get it fixed and we're going to get it taken care of and we're going to get it solved. We're not going to be able to solve it. I hope we have to pay for it. I know people look at me kind of strange when I say that. I hope we are the generation, my generation, that has to deal with it, because it's not right to give it to the next. But you need to start this conversation. You need to let people know what is happening, because there's a lot of people who just don't care. Look at when I was talking to Mitter Carpenter last week. We were talking about the omnibus, the $1.3 trillion omnibus. Folks, $1.3 million was used to fund the federal government until September, and it was barely spoken of. It wasn't spoken of about what was spent. It was spoken of, well, Donald Trump signs it. Oh, Donald Trump didn't sign it. The fact that it was even that far is ridiculous. But yeah, people went, all right. We have to stop that. And it's tough because it's a gravy train right now, folks. Life's pretty good. You can go to the movies tonight. You can go home and you can order any kind of food, depending on where you live, and have it either delivered or go get it. You don't have to really do much. Sit down, pull up some TV, and there you go. Make sure you watch whatever's on TV tonight. It's a pretty easy life. It's not easy when you start talking about debt, having to tighten the belt, what things have to get removed versus what has to be kept. That's when your decisions have to start being made, and that's when people's intentions really do show up. So that justice needs to be served as far as who is going to be brave enough to say, we need to stop this. We need to stop this. This cannot continue. Hopefully it'll be you and me. I will use my platform to speak out against it. And it is my hope that when you face an opportunity to be able to speak out against it, you do. Now, there are some, and I said it yesterday, and I'll say it every time, who will say, hey, man, I'm in a spot where, you know, I got kids to feed and all this other kinds of stuff. I've got situations that if I speak up, I'm going to lose my job, or I'm going to, the only one that I would accept is, hey man, right now I'm not in a spot where if I lose this job, I can find something to take care of my family. You know what, sir, ma'am, I got you. That's fine. Because that's your primary job, is to take care of your family. But if you're in a spot where it's not going to impact your job, and you're like, well, I don't want to get ostracized from my circle of friends because we go out to the local shenanigans every Friday and I really like to hang out with them. Okay, well, then you really might have to actually, like, reassess your life. If your big thing is going out to, like, Bennigan's or shenanigans on Friday and drinking your face away and you don't want to make those people angry, you might want to look at it, because that's not great. Sorry, but I'm not sorry. That stuff just doesn't fly with me. So that's the things we have to talk about, the justice that needs to be served. And maybe that is something that you need to reassess in breaking away from those people, which is hard, especially the longer you've known them. But when it comes time to face those, because everybody's going to have to face it, the longer it is, it's like a Band-Aid. The longer that you keep it on, the harder it's going to be to rip off. So that's my hope, that you are able to serve some form of justice as far as speaking out for the unborn and letting people know that, hey, what we're doing right now in life in this country is ridiculous. In this union of states is ridiculous. And we need to stop it. So now that I've given you completely inspirational words of wisdom, as you can tell, my career when I was a coach, when I was a freshman girls basketball coach, it was not really good. And as you can tell, because I'm not very Pacino-esque in my speeches. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Any Given Sunday. I'm not really like the Pacino speech at the end. We give up 1 mile at a time. No, that's not me. Can't do it. I can, but nobody takes me seriously. Anyway, let's break down the brief. What do we have? Hour one, we're going to take a look at the bulletin. We got stories from across the world. We're going to talk about Kim Jong-un possibly going to China. We're going to look at another invention from a man, Elon Musk, who wants to make Lego blocks out of rock. In business news, China and the United States are talking about possibly getting different things, working around their tariff agreement and so forth. In politics, I'm going to talk about Mad Dog Mattis and his isolation due to the mustachioed one, John Bolton, coming in. And then let's see what else. International is a great story because it talks about how Australia is not the land of milk and gun registration that people want to make it out to be. In religion, I'm going to tell you where the largest Catholic church in the world actually is, and it's not where you would expect. We talk about the U.S. citizenship being added to the 2020 census and how that's not already a thing. In tech news, we talk about how Arizona is getting rid of Uber and their self-driving cars for now after, you know, they kind of hit and killed a woman. And then, of course, significant digits from 538.com. But first thing, before anything else, I do want to actually address some breaking news, and that is no charges are going to be filed in the Alton Sterling death, according to the Louisiana Attorney General. So what we have right now, as of 11:27 Eastern time, is that no charges will be filed against the two police officers in the July 2016 shooting death of Alton Sterling, according to Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry. This decision was not taken lightly. We came to this conclusion after countless hours of reviewing the evidence. The officers' actions were quote-unquote well-founded and reasonable. Now, the original story that was published earlier in the day is Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry is announcing the results of the state's investigation into the July 2016 shooting death of Alton Sterling by Baton Rouge Police. Landry's update in Baton Rouge coming 10 months after federal prosecutors deemed they wouldn't file civil rights charges against two police officers in the case is being done after he met Tuesday morning with Sterling's relatives to tell them of his decision. Outrage over Sterling's death led to renewed Black Lives Matter protests across the nation that year. What happened? Well, actually, what I was supposed to say is what did happen is Sterling, 37, was shot and killed by police outside a convenience store in July 2016. So cell phone video showed that Sterling, a Black man, was pinned to the ground by the white Baton Rouge police officers before he was shot. Police said Sterling was shot because he was reaching for a gun. Officers responding to a call about a man with a gun. The call was from a homeless man who said that after he approached Sterling for money, Sterling showed him the weapon. In May 2017, federal prosecutors found there wasn't enough evidence to warrant civil rights charges against Officer Blaine Salamini, who shot Sterling, and Howie Lake II. The feds determined the officer's actions were reasonable under the circumstances, including that the two used several less-than-lethal techniques before using force, that Sterling struggled with the officers and failed to follow orders, and that video evidence couldn't prove or disprove the officer's assertion that Sterling was reaching for a gun. Once again, the breaking news of the day at this point is that the Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry will not be filing charges against the officers in the death of Alton Sterling. Now, let's break down the brief. Headline of the day before that was strong possibility North Korea's Kim Jong-un is in Beijing, according to sources. The who of this story is Kim Jong-un and Chinese President Xi Jinping. Where is this taking place? In Beijing. The what of this story, speculation about a visit to Beijing by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un or another high-level Pyongyang official was running high on Tuesday amid talks of preparations for a meeting between the North's reclusive leader and Donald Trump. Kim Jong-un made a surprise visit to Beijing on his first known trip outside of North Korea since taking power in 2011, according to three people with the knowledge of the visit. This is actually Bloomberg this morning was confirming this visit with three unnamed sources saying that it was indeed Kim Jong-un actually traveling to China to meet with the Chinese president. The why of this story. The arrival of a special train in Beijing and unusual heavy security at a guest house where prominent North Koreans have stayed in the past have fueled talk that Kim was making his first visit to China as the North's leader. Such a trip would be seen as a potential precursor to Kim's planned summit with South Korean President Moon Jae-in in late April and his anticipated meeting with Trump by May. Analysts, however, question whether Kim would make the visit to Beijing himself rather than send an envoy. Of course, when this story was being researched this morning, it was actually unknown whether it would be Kim Jong-un or not. Bloomberg says, according to their three sources, that it is. Everybody else is still speculating. And as of right now, there is no confirmation. There's still nobody is corroborating Bloomberg's sources. But back to the story. Whoever is on the train, their visit to Beijing appeared to be a short one. On Tuesday afternoon, a vehicle convoy led by a motorcycle escort was seen heading in the direction of Beijing's main railway station. While there has been no word of a meeting with Chinese leaders, China has been one of North Korea's most important allies, even though relations have chilled recently because of Kim's development of nuclear weapons and long-range missiles. On Monday, heavy scrutiny was reported at the Friendship Bridge on the Yalu River, marking the border between China and North Korea before a train passed. There were reports of it transiting several stations on the way from North Korea to Beijing. Japanese broadcaster NTV reported that the green and yellow train appeared very similar to the one that Kim's father and predecessor as North Korean's leader, Kim Jong-un, took to Beijing in 2011, or Kim Jong-il. Sorry about that. Video that aired on NTV also showed a motorcade of black limousines waiting at the train station and rows of Chinese soldiers marching on what appeared to be a train platform. The video does not show anyone getting off the train. Around 2:45 p.m. Tuesday, a convoy of about a dozen cars, including a large black limousine, was seen heading in the direction of the railway station. The limousine was seen about 10 minutes later entering the station under heavy security. The station itself was closed to the public, an unusual security measure. The Chinese Foreign Ministry asked whether Kim or another North Korean official was visiting Beijing, was reported as saying, "I know you're all very curious, but I have no information on that." Past visits by Kim Jong-il to China were surrounded in secrecy, with Beijing only confirming his presence after he had crossed the border by train back into North Korea. North Korea's state-run media has had no reports of a delegation traveling to China. The speculation has been fueled further on Monday evening when a vehicle convoy entered the guest house in Beijing, and a military honor guard and heavy security were seen later. The guest house has been a favorite residence of Kim Jong-il during his visits to Beijing. So on Tuesday, a convoy of official Chinese cars was seen leaving that guest house East Gate. Chinese police and the paramilitary People's Armed Police stood guard in the area, and unidentified men in plainclothes attempted to prevent photographers from taking pictures. Cars in the convoy were identified by yellow stickers, but carried no diplomatic license plate. South Korea's presidential office said it could not confirm reports that the train carried Kim, nor a separate report that Kim's sister was on board. According to South Korean analysts, they are doubtful that the visitor is actually Kim. Since succeeding his father as the leader in 2011, Kim has touted an image of his country as a diplomatic equal to China, and it's unlikely he would sneak into Beijing for his first face-to-face meeting with the Chinese leadership, these analysts are reporting. They said it's more likely that Kim sent a special envoy, possibly his younger sister, Kim Yong-jong, to appease a traditional ally ahead of his planned meeting with the president of South Korea and the United States. The envoy could potentially seek Chinese commitment for future support should North Korea's talks with rivals fall through, according to a visiting scholar at Seoul's Asian Institute for Policy Studies. North Korea doesn't want to send a message to China that has been pushed. Oh, I'm sorry. North Korea doesn't want to send a message that China has been pushed to the back as it makes diplomatic approaches to the United States and South Korea, adding that the visit could be part of the North's effort to gain leverage in the talks with the South and the United States. North Korean relations with China, a traditional ally, have been strained since Kim purged several top-ranking officials close to Beijing, including his uncle, Zhang Song-taik. Tensions were heightened in 2017 after a string of missile tests, which rankled China's leaders and resulted in multiple rounds of United Nations sanctions targeting North Korea's ability to bring in cash. If the talks with South Korea and the United States fall through, the North Koreans will surely try to demonstrate its nuclear weapons and missile capabilities again. The special envoy could discuss this possibility with Chinese officials, asking China not to press too hard with sanctions if that actually happens. Experts have noted that while China has publicly lauded peaceful efforts to resolve tensions on the Korean Peninsula, it ran the risk of being relegated to the sidelines. White House spokesman Ron Shang said Monday that the U.S. could not confirm reports that Kim was actually in China. Zhao reiterated Trump's plans to meet with Kim, saying the U.S.-led international pressure campaign against Pyongyang has paid dividends and has brought North Koreans to the table. China does have a mutual defense treaty with the North Koreans under which both parties pledge to immediately render military and other assistance by all means at its disposal in the event of a war or a foreign attack, although some analysts have called into question whether Beijing would honor it. Both Kim Jong-il and Kim Il-sung, the current leader's father and grandfather, traveled by this heavily armored train when they visited their allies in China and in Russia, according to Michael Madden, an expert in North Korean leadership, told CNN. It's likely only Kim family members would travel by that particular train. So and that is the end of the report. As I was saying before, as of right now, there still is no confirmation except for Bloomberg News saying that it was indeed Kim. We will see if it actually is the case. This information came to us via CNN.com, AP News, and Bloomberg. You are listening to The Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel featuring king-size truth from radio-size speakers. I'm going through these stories from the Bulletin, and I want to know what your opinion on any of them are. You can give me a call at 844-527-8723. Moving on to politics. At odds with Bolton on North Korea, Mattis appears isolated. The who of the story is John Bolton, James Mattis, and President Trump. Where is this taking place? In Washington, D.C. The what of this story? Of the issues that divide Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and President Donald Trump's incoming National Security Advisor, John Bolton, one stands out, and that would be North Korea. The why of this story, Bolton, who will replace Army Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster's on April 9th, has publicly advocated for overthrowing the North Korean government. Mattis, a retired Marine general who knows intimately the cost of war, favors diplomacy to rid the North of its nuclear weapons and has said war on the Korean Peninsula would be, quote-unquote, catastrophic. On Iran, too, Mattis seems at odds with Bolton, who has argued for abandoning the Obama-era nuclear deal. These and other matters of war and peace will test Mattis' influence with Trump as his national security team is overhauled. Mattis was sometimes at odds with McMaster's, but the arrival of the hawkish Bolton, combined with the firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and the uncertain status of John Kelly as White House Chief of Staff, appears to leave Mattis more isolated than at any other time since he took over at the Pentagon 15 months ago. Often described as a steadying or moderately influence on the impulse of Trump, Mattis has little previous relationship with Bolton. The North Korean issue is front and center. Trump has agreed to meet with the North Korean President Kim Jong-un by May to discuss the North's nuclear disarmament. The unprecedented summit could be a turning point in a decades-old U.S.-North Korean standoff that Trump himself has said could end in quote-unquote fire and fury, an American nuclear attack to stop the North from gaining the ability to strike the U.S. with a nuclear missile. According to retired Navy Admiral James Stradvis, Dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts, this is buckle-up time, he told MSNBC last week. For the military, I have three words, sharpen your swords. He, describing Bolton, is someone who's going to reach for the military instrument. The changes in the White House and at the State Department, while significant for Mattis, are hardly heart-stopping. People close to him sense no change in his commitment to the job. Some suggest that Trump's decision to move former Republican congressman and current CIA director Mike Pompeo to state, replacing outgoing Rex Tillerson, could benefit Mattis in the sense that he'll have a partner at state who is better aligned with Trump. Publicly, Mattis has said little about the shakeup. He was in Afghanistan when Tillerson got the axe. When reporters asked his reaction a couple of days later, Mattis said he preferred not to comment on the details, although he went on to suggest that it is important that its importance was being exaggerated. He said that in all of his discussions abroad with foreign government officials and American troops, the matter was not brought up once. He continued, I understand why you're asking, but I'm just pointing out that in most parts of the world, this is a Washington, D.C. story. Another Washington story is Mattis and his ability to forge a workable relationship with Trump despite differences on some issues like the Iran nuclear deal, which Mattis says is flawed but worth honoring as long as the Iranians do. Mattis also has differed with the president over Trump's wish to bar all transgender people from serving in the military, and he helped sway Trump from his inclination last year to end the U.S. military involvement in Afghanistan. The Mattis formula seems to be simple. Out of the spotlight, out of trouble. The less he says publicly, the less he risks losing influence with Trump. According to Lauren DeJong Sherman, a defense analyst at the Center for New American Security, part of his success is absolutely the fact that you don't see him in the limelight terribly much. That may be keeping him out of trouble with the White House, but I think it's setting an increasingly bad precedent in terms of Pentagon transparency. If Mattis, who spent more than 40 years in uniform and is the first career military officer to lead the Pentagon since George C. Marshall in the 1950s, isn't the most experienced politician to run the military's vast bureaucracy, he has shown a knack for staying out of trouble with his thin-skinned boss. Mattis has even broken Trump's of his habit of calling the retired general Mad Dog, which Mattis insists was the media invention to begin with. Trump frequently has lunch and dinner with defense secretaries and speaks glowingly of Mattis to outside advisors. The White House officials have said that Trump sometimes repeats military historical anecdotes that he heard from Secretary Mattis. Even Mattis' few known stumbles have not dogged him. In August, for example, Mattis told sailors at a submarine base in his home state of Washington that the Navy would give them the worst and the best days of their lives, and then added, that means you're not someone blank sitting on the sidelines. He continued, you know what I mean? Kind of sitting there saying, well, I should have done something with my life. His language was quickly forgotten. The episode pointed to a man who has shaped the job and not let it shape him, so much so that perhaps the most poignant criticism of his tenure has been the secrecy with which the military has handled everything from troop deployment numbers to the detail of its military strategies, things that have often been made public under previous secretaries. This entire story was brought to you by AP News. You are listening to the Bear Brief here on the Crusade Channel, featuring king-size truth from radio-size speakers. Going through the bulletin, just talked about the apparent isolation of Secretary Mattis with the incoming mustachioed one, John Bolton, and his strike first policy versus everybody else's, hey, let's actually take a breath policies. Let me know what you think. Give me a call at 844-527-8723. Moving on to business. U.S. and China seek trade moves on autos, financials, and chips. According to sources, the who here is China and the United States of America. The what of this story? The top Trump administrative officials are asking China to cut tariffs on imported cars, allowing foreign majority ownership of financial service firms, and buy more U.S.-made semiconductors in negotiations to avoid plans to slap tariffs on a host of Chinese goods and a potential trade war. The why of the story, a person familiar with the discussion said that these were among the asks from Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer as they pursue talks with Beijing. The Wall Street Journal first reported the demands from U.S. officials, saying they came in letters sent to Beijing last week. White House Trade Advisor Peter Navarro confirmed that President Donald Trump asked Mnuchin and Lighthizer to try to resolve trade differences with China. We're hopeful that China will work with us to basically address some of these practices, Navarro told CNBC television. U.S. stocks surged on Monday when the news of the two sides were talking after a massive rout last week when Donald Trump announced plans to impose tariffs of up to $60 billion of Chinese imports over alleged misappropriations of the U.S. intellectual property. The Dow Jones Industrial Average posted its third biggest points gain ever, rising 669.4 points, or 2.8%, to close out at 24,202.6, while the broader S&P 500 rose 2.7% after a nearly 6% drop last week. Chinese Foreign Minister spokeswoman Huan Chongying said China's door was always open to talks, but that this needed to happen on the basis of equality and mutual respect with a win-win outcome. Premier Ning Kuang-wang said earlier on Monday that China and the United States should maintain negotiations and repeated pledges to ease access for American businesses to China's markets. Li told a conference that included global chief executives that China would treat foreign and domestic firms equally, would not force foreign firms to transfer technology, and would strengthen intellectual property rights, repeating promises that have failed to placate Washington. Despite a steady stream of fierce rhetoric from Chinese state media lambasting the United States for being a bully and warning of retaliation, China and the U.S. officials are busy negotiating behind the scenes. In an interview aired on Sunday, Mnuchin told Fox News that he was pursuing an agreement with the Chinese to, quote-unquote, for them to open up their markets, reduce their tariffs, stop forcing technology transfers. These are all the things we want to do. He continued, we are proceeding with these tariffs. We are not putting them on hold unless we have an acceptable agreement that the president signs off on. China has offered to buy more U.S. semiconductors by diverting some purchases from South Korea and Taiwan, the Financial Times reported. Citing people briefed on the negotiations, China imported $2.6 billion of semiconductors from the United States last year. Chinese officials are also working to finalize rules by May instead of by the end of June to allow foreign financial groups to take majority stakes in Chinese security firms, the Financial Times continued. Blackstone Group Chief Executive Steven Schwarzman told Reuters on Monday that I anticipate that for political reasons, it would be logical for China to respond because countries do. He continued, that's why I view this more as a skirmish, and I think the interests of both countries are served by resolving some of these matters. China called on the World Trade Organization members on Monday to unite to oppose Trump's proposed tariffs targeting alleged intellectual property theft, saying that they should, quote-unquote, lock this beast back into the cage of WTO rules. On Friday, China responded to the U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum by declaring plans to levy additional duties on up to $3 billion of U.S. imports, including fruit, nuts, and wine. China could also inflict pain on the U.S. multinationals that rely on China as a substantial and growing portion of their total revenues, according to Alex Wolf, a senior emerging markets economist at Aberdeen Standard Investments. He continued, this could put the U.S. companies such as Apple, Microsoft, Starbucks, GM, Nike, and so on in the firing line. China can increase the regulatory burden on U.S. companies through new inspections and rules, ban travel, stop providing export licensing of key intermediate goods, raise the tax burden on U.S. multinationals in China, or block U.S. companies from the government procurement market. Wolf continued, the Trump administration has demanded that China immediately cut its $375 billion trade surplus with the United States by $100 billion. China has a 25% tariff on U.S. cars and has talked recently of lowering it, while Trump has often complained that the U.S. import tariff on passenger vehicles is only 2.5%. China's imports of U.S.-built motor vehicles totaled $10.6 billion in 2017, about 8% of the country's overall U.S. imports by value, according to U.S. government data. On the report, on the reported offer to increase U.S. semiconductor imports, it is unclear how U.S. chips would replace South Korean and Taiwanese chips, since there is a minimal overlap between U.S. chips and those of the two Asian producers. China is heavily dependent on foreign semiconductors, one of its biggest import categories by value. That said, the United States accounted for just 1% of China's total semiconductor imports last year by value, according to Reuters calculations based on Chinese customs data. This information comes to us via Reuters. You are listening to the Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel, featuring King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. I'm going through the bulletin right now, and I just covered international business news between China and the United States. Apparently, just like yesterday's story in the bulletin, where the United States and South Korea were now renegotiating certain tariffs and trade agreements as a result of these tariffs that the Trump administration put on. These recently introduced tariffs have now brought the Chinese to the table to renegotiate certain aspects as well. Let me know what you think about that. 844-527-8723. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Do you think that this was a plan by the Trump administration, or do you think they kind of just stumbled into it? Let me know. 844-527-8723. In international news, Australian gun control advocates call for federal intervention to save firearm pack. The who is the people of Australia. Where is in Australia? The what of this story. Gun control advocates have called for federal intervention and even a referendum after commissioning a damning report that shows states and territories have trashed the historic 1996 National Firearms Agreement. The why of this story. The agreement, which led to the surrender and destruction of more than 1.1 million firearms, was signed by all states and territories after the Port Arthur massacre and after threats by then Prime Minister John Howard to hold a constitutional referendum on the issue. The report by Gun Control Australia, otherwise known as GCA, found that more than 50 breaches of the code by states and territories. Each jurisdiction has walked away in some way, the report has found. GCA is now calling for a referendum to make gun control laws a federal responsibility and to prevent the quote-unquote wreckage of the 1996 agreement. The organization's chair, Sam Lee, said the referendum was needed after, quote, years of political pressure, unquote, by the gun lobby. The National Firearms Agreement is hemorrhaging because the states and territories are legislating it away in return for gun lobby votes and funding, Lee continued. Last week, former Deputy Prime Minister Tim Fincher told The Guardian Australia he was deeply concerned about the emergence of an NRA-style gun lobby in Australia. His comments came after it was revealed the Home Affairs Minister, Peter Dutton, was considering establishing a committee to allow gun importers to review proposed changes to firearm regulations for quote-unquote appropriateness and intent. Lee said the election eve revelations in Tanzania that the Liberal government had plans to further water down gun laws in the state where the Port Arthur massacre occurred were a quote-unquote further nail in the coffin of the 1996 agreement. If the states aren't going to comply with the agreement, then it is fairly useless, continued Sam Lee of the GCA. I'm sorry, it's a she. I assumed her gender. She said Tanzania was already in breach of the national agreement by failing to ban prohibitive firearms from competitive shooting not complying with conditions related to self-loading, category D, weapons, and for allowing children as young as 12 to possess a firearm. Concerns about children and firearms feature prominently in the GCA commissioned report. Despite the national agreement restricting gun licenses to people over 18, every state and territory allows minors to possess and use firearms. Western Australia has no minimum age for club shoots. New South Wales now allows all the use of silencers, a breach of the 1996 code. It also allows semi-automatic weapons for use by people whose occupation is not pest control and has no legal limit on the amount of ammunition that can be purchased. In Queensland, gun owners can be licensed for 10 years, double the time limit in the national agreement, and a license is not mandatory for the purchase of ammunition. In Western Australia, gun owner safety training is not required by law except for handguns, and firearm sales are not limited to licensed dealers. Western Australia, Queensland, Victoria, and New South Wales either do not or only somewhat comply in the legislation with an NFA requirement for an effective national firearm registry, a goal now delayed for over two decades, according to this GCA report. Lee said that the report, which detailed 50 examples of noncompliance, showed that the states cannot be trusted to keep us safe, ironically enough. Yet, yes, we had the great National Firearms Agreement, but that agreement means nothing if the states fail to comply with it and continue to erode it, she continued to say. The Shooting Industry Foundation of Australia, or SIFA, said in a statement, the firearms agreement was not binding on states and the call for federal intervention was, quote unquote, quite extraordinary. SIFA's view is that any move to undermine the firm foundation of our federation, which have underpinned more than a century of political stability and nationhood, is to be questioned, particularly when such a move is suggested by a secretive special interest group that has never revealed the funding sources of its membership. SIFA notes that the National Firearms Agreement is neither law nor binding on the states. We also note that over the last two decades, Australian state jurisdictions have worked tirelessly to protect the safety and security of their citizens, supported by exemplary standards of behavior modeled by Australians' million licensed firearm owners. The Federation said it supported a national integrated digital system of licensing and permitting that would remove paper-based compliance and allow jurisdictions to access real-time information on gun ownership. This information came to us via The Guardian Australia, and I will be talking about that in depth in the next hour. This is the Bearer Brief on the Crusade Channel featuring King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. Going through the bulletin right now, we just touched on international news on how Australia is not the land of milk and gun registration that everybody tries to claim it is when they use the anti-gun argument. Let me know at 844-527-8723 what you think about that. Does this shock you because you thought everybody in Australia just gave up their guns willingly? Or does it not surprise you that, as Jeff Goldblum likes to say in Jurassic Park, life finds a way. You can't strip people of their natural rights forever and expect them to not resist. And give me a call at 844-527-8733. Moving on to religion. The largest Catholic church in the world is not where you would expect. Try to find something different for religion because every day it seemed to be something else, doom and gloom. So I bring you the largest Catholic church in the world. Where is it located? And folks, I am going to do the best I can with this name. As you can tell, longtime listeners to The Brief, that's probably not going to happen. But it's in Yamoussoukro, which is in the Ivory Coast of Africa. If you were asked the average Catholic where the largest church in the world is, they might say St. Peter's in Rome or some other famous and massive basilica in Spain, France, or Italy. But there is a surprising answer to the actual location of the world's largest church. It's in the small African nation of the Ivory Coast. The Basilica of Our Lady of Peace is a Catholic minor basilica dedicated to Our Lady of Peace in Yamoussoukro, the administrative capital of the Ivory Coast. The basilica was constructed between 1985 and 1989. The design of the dome and the encircled plaza are clearly inspired by the Basilica of St. Peter in Vatican City, although it is not an outright replica. The cornerstone was laid on August 10, 1985, and was consecrated on September 10th, on the 10th of September in 1990 by Pope St. John Paul II. With a footprint of 30,000 square meters, or 320,000 square feet, Guinness World Records lists the Basilica of Our Lady of Peace as the largest church in the world, having surpassed the previous record holder, St. Peter's Basilica, upon completion. However, it also includes a rectory and a residence counted in the overall area, which are not strictly part of the church. However, despite its external size, St. Peter's is still large. Is still larger internally, able to accommodate nearly 60,000 for St. Peter compared to the African Basilica's 18,000. The cost of this massive basilica was $300 million US. Despite its massive size, the Basilica of Our Lady of Peace is relatively unknown throughout the world. That point highlights the attitudes of many Catholics to the realities of the church in the 21st century. Many people in the West, when thinking of Catholicism, think of the historic churches of Europe, but oftentimes those churches sit in what are now radically secularized countries and sit mostly empty. The church in the West is shrinking or stagnant in growth, but in Africa, Christianity is exploding. In 1900, the entire continent of Africa was barely a couple million Catholics. Today, there are nearly 200 billion Catholics in, no way, there's 200 million Catholics in Africa. Extrapolating that trend, by 2040, there will be roughly 460 million African Catholics. For perspective, that number would be greater than the total world population of Catholics as it stood just before the Second Vatican Council. By certain estimates, in 2030, there will be more Catholics in Africa than in Europe. However, the Basilica has aroused much international controversy. For the lavish building, glittering with Italian marble, sits in the middle of an impoverished African city where only a minority of homes have running water and adequate sanitation, and the cost of the basilica doubled the national debt of this small country. Despite this, many of the country's Catholics are proud of their monument, and the church is maintained by the priests of the Society of Catholic Apostates, who claim St. Vincent as their founder. This information was brought to us by ucatholic.com, sacreddestinations.com, and diocese.com. You are listening to The Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel, featuring king-size truth from radio-size speakers. Almost done with the bulletin. Looks like we're actually going to run into hour two with it today. That's not a problem. If you want to give me a call about any of these subjects, you can call me at 844-527-8723. We do have time for one more, and that is going to be culture. So in cultural news in the U.S., it is going to add the citizenship question to the 2020 census, according to the Commerce Department. The WHO is the U.S. Commerce Department. Where is this taking place? In Washington, D.C., and then throughout the United States during the 2020 census. What is happening? A question about citizenship status will be included on the 2020 census to help enforce the Voting Rights Act, a federal official said on Monday. But California sued to block the move, arguing that it would discourage immigrants from participating. The why of this story. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross decided to add the question to the count after a Department of Justice request based on the desire for better enforcement. Let me see. I just got a better enforcement of the voting law, the U.S. Department of Commerce said in a statement. Secretary Ross determined that obtaining complete and accurate information to meet this legitimate government purpose outweighed the limited potential adverse impacts. The census, which is mandated under the U.S. Constitution and takes place every 10 years, counts every resident in the United States. It is used to determine the allocation to states of seats in the U.S. House of Representatives and to distribute billions of dollars in federal funds to local communities. Ross said in a memo that the Voting Rights Act requires a tally of citizens of voting age to protect minorities against discrimination, and that getting this information as part of the census would make it more complete. Opponents of a census question about citizenship state that it could further discourage immigrants from participating in the count, especially when they are already fear of how information could be used against them. The state of California, which has a large immigrant population, responded early Tuesday by filing a lawsuit in federal court against the Commerce Department and the Census Bureau. California Attorney General Xavier Becerra asked the U.S. District Court in the Northern District of California to issue a preliminary injunction and rule that the move violated the Constitution by interfering with the obligation to conduct a full count of the U.S. population. Test surveys showed in late 2017 that some immigrants were afraid to provide information to U.S. Census workers because of the fears about being deported. This decision comes at a time when we have seen xenophobic and anti-immigrant policy positions from this administration, according to Kirsten Clark, president and executive director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Immigrants and those who live with immigrants are troubled by confidentiality and data sharing aspects of the count, according to Mike Lynn Myers, a researcher at the Census Bureau Center for Surveying Measurements, who told the Bureau of the National Advisory Committee in November that census researchers have said immigrants they have interviewed spontaneously raised topics like the travel ban and the dissolution of DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, a program that protected from deportation young immigrants brought to the country illegally as children. One person told government interviewers the possibility that the census could give my information to internal security and immigration could come and arrest me for not having documents terrifies me. Citizen questions have appeared on the census in the past and are included on more frequent population surveys that are administrated by the Census Bureau. Ross said that he met census officials and considered arguments for and against the change made by interest groups, members of Congress, and state and local officials. He said no evidence was provided to the agency that showed a citizenship question would decrease response rate among those who already, quote unquote, generally distrust government and government information collection efforts, dislike the current administration, or feared law enforcement. However, Ross said that the Commerce Department was unable to determine how the citizenship question would affect responsiveness. Even if there is some impact on responses, the value of more complete and accurate data derived from surveying the entire population outweighs such a concern, the memo stated. This information was brought to us via Reuters.com. That looks like that's going to take us up to this hour. We're going to come right up to the end of this hour. We have more of the bulletin that we are going to get through. Plus, I have a article on why teachers are leaving the profession, according to Gallup. So we'll see if they're correct. They most likely are not. Plus, the world famous, you've got to be kidding me. And if you want to be part of this conversation, you can give me your phone calls. Well, give me your phone calls. I'll give you this number, 844-527-8723, and you can call me and let me know what you think about any of these stories. This is the Bear Brief here on the Crusade Channel featuring king-size truth from radio-size speakers. We will be back right after these messages. Stay tuned. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Bear Brief here on the Crusade Channel featuring king-size truth from radio-size speakers. We are now on to hour two, and we are going to continue breaking down the bulletin. I'm going to give you my commentary on some of these stories, especially that Australian one. I cannot wait to get into that. Also, I want to get your phone calls at any of this stuff. Let me know, 844-527-8723. And we can have that conversation about it. Of course, once again, if you are not into the phone or if you are at work and you are desperate to tell me how terrible my voice is or how terrible my opinion is on anything, of course, you can tell me something good, too. I like that stuff, but I don't know. I'm always kind of bracing for impact on those negative things. I guess it comes from I was a collection agent. I worked for a bank for a couple of years as a collection agent. Then I was a teacher for a while, so usually when I get response, it's kind of more negative than positive. But give me a call, 844-527-8723, if you are afraid of the phone or you're just not, you know, into talking to people, which is fine. BarrettBrief@gmail.com, B-A-R-R-E-T-T-B-R-I-E-F@gmail.com. You can send me a message on the Twitter at Barrett Brief or Broadcasting Barrett. Gab.ai, Broadcasting Barrett as well. And of course, Instagram for all them awesome pictures, RTB_2. There are some of you that are on Facebook still, despite what the Zuck has told us, and despite what we know about it. you can find me on Facebook.com/Barrett Brief. You can send me messages, post something on the page. Have at it. Have a blast. yeah. And those are the ways to reach me and get in touch. So we're going to continue going through the bulletin right now. We didn't get through the rest of it. We just finished up the census question. Once again, I'm going to go through all aspects of the bulletin before I give you my two cents, as you would say, or more I like to say, my footnote to an idea. So let's get into the science part of the bulletin. Elon Musk announces Lego-like bricks that can build homes in a day or two. The who is Elon Musk. It may be called a boring company, but Elon Musk's infrastructure plans and unique products are anything but boring. The tunneling building firm's founder just introduced new merchandise, life-size Lego-like interlocking bricks used to build sculptures and buildings. The why of this story, which I guess can be applied to every story that is about Elon Musk. The bricks will be made out of sturdy materials such as tunneling rock, according to Musk. He continued, rated for California seismic loads, so super strong, but bored in the middle, like an aircraft wing spar, so not so heavy. So not heavy. Musk explained in an early morning tweet that has already been shared nearly 5,000 times. He continued, the new Boring Company merch coming soon. Life-size Lego-like interlocking bricks made from tunneling rock that you can use to create sculptures and buildings. Rated for same thing. Musk said the first kit will follow the ancient Egyptian theme of pyramids, Sphinx, Temple of Ors, etc. Fans were quick to share their excitement over the latest project, though some were still fixated on the company's popular flamethrowers, which starts shipping in the spring. Earlier this year, the Boring Company sold 20,000 flamethrowers for $500 apiece in just a few days. According to the company's website, the product is the world's safest and guaranteed to liven up any party. Flamethrower aficionados frantically searched online to find any leftovers. Some discovered flamethrowers on eBay being sold for as much as $25,000. Somebody eagerly tweeted Musk and said, how long for the flamethrower deliveries? And so Musk, not being, you know, dismayed, said probably in May. Impervious to my soon-to-arrived, not a flamethrower. Guaranteed to be... Okay, then there's just a whimsical little exchange between two. Now, while the flamethrowers are being marketed as big boy toys, the Lego-like bricks are designed for speed and efficiency. Somebody did ask Musk, hey, Elon Musk, any way to turn this into affordable housing in areas of future drilling locations? Little to no transportation costs of contractors can come to the drill sites to pick up material by the pound. Musk said he believes the boring bricks, which will interlock with precise surface finish, will be so easy to handle that two people could build the outer wall of a small house in a day or so. People were shocked to hear Musk's prediction. People continued to tweet him, wow, is this biodegradable? What is the impact factor on the environment? And so Musk, in his trademark genius, said, it's literally made of rock. He plans to ship the product worldwide once it's developed. He said in his initial tweet that the bricks will be coming soon. More on Elon Musk in my footnotes after the bulletin. You are listening to the Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel, featuring King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. Going through the bulletin right now, I want give me a call and let me know what you think about Elon Musk and his continued development of just the weirdest stuff you've ever heard of. You like it? Do you not like it? Do you think it's funny? Do you just think the guy is, he just needs a good dose of Ritalin and just stops making stuff? Do you think he should just keep making as much stuff as he wants? give me a call, 844-527-8723. In tech news, Arizona governor suspends Uber driver's ability. I'm sorry, I jumped too far ahead. Arizona governor suspends Uber's ability to test self-driving cars. The who of this story is Uber. Where is this taking place in Arizona? The what of the story, the decision to block Uber technologies is a blow to the ride-hailing company, which sees its future success reliant on driverless vehicles and trails competitors such as Alphabet Inc.'s Waymo in developing the technology. The why of the story, the governor of Arizona in May suspended Uber's ability to test self-driving cars on public roads in the state following the fatal crash last week that killed the 49-year-old pedestrian. The decision to block Uber technologies is a blow to the ride-sharing company. Arizona had been a key hub for Uber, with about half of the company's 200 self-driving cars and a staff of hundreds. And a letter sent to Uber's chief executive, Darla Krasowskian, and shared with the media, government Doug Ducey said he found a video released by the police of the crash disturbing and alarming, and raises many questions about the ability of Uber to continue testing in Arizona. The police and safety regulators are investigating the March 18 fatality in which a woman crossing a four-lane road at night was struck and killed by an Uber self-driving SUV. The incident has focused new attention on the lack of clear safety standards for such vehicles. Ducey called the crash an unquestionable failure. He continued, "In the best interest of the people of my state, I have directed the Arizona Department of Transportation to suspend Uber's ability to test and operate autonomous vehicles in Arizona's public roadways." The letter strikes a dramatically different tone from late 2016, when Ducey invited Uber to the state with celebrations, saying, "Arizona welcomes Uber self-driving cars with open arm and wide open roads." Well, apparently not that wide open. At the time, a banner was hung on a building in Phoenix welcoming Uber. Uber moved its driverless cars to Arizona from San Francisco after California regulators shut down the self-driving fleet for not having proper permits. Uber, which had already pulled its self-driving cars off the road after the incident, said in a statement on Monday that they will, quote-unquote, keep a dialogue open with the governor's office to address any concerns they might have. This information comes to us from CNBC.com. You are listening to the Barrett Briefing on the Crusade Channel, featuring king-size truth from radio-size speakers. Going through these stories on the bullets, and I want to know your opinion on them. 844-527-8723. Now we are moving on to significant digits from 538.com. Your significant digits for today, Tuesday, March 27th, 2016. First one is 1.5% vacancy. 5,000 residential units were destroyed last year when wildfires ripped through Northern California. Most of these homes have yet to be rebuilt, in part because of a dearth of construction crews. As a result, rental prices have shot up by as much as 30%, and there is a vacancy rate of just 1.5% for residential structures. This information is coming to us from governing.com. 2 days is the next digit. You have a little extra time to file your taxes this year. The usual tax day, April 15th, falls on a Sunday. And the next day is Emancipation Day, a legal holiday in Washington, D.C. That means you have until midnight on April 17th to get your papers of taxation to the man and make sure that you put the proper postage on it. That's coming to us from quartz.com. The next significant digit is 63% price hike. There's a new California law that requires drug companies to give major purchasers a 60-day notice for significant price hikes, and it's already yielding results. A generic medication used to treat glaucoma is about to go up in price by 63%. A solution that's inhaled to prevent asthma attacks will go up by nearly 50% come May 1st. Still unknown whether people will push back about the higher costs. This comes to us from Politico.com. Next digit is 94 stores. That's the number of Winn-Dixie and Bilo grocery stores that will be closed when its parent company files for bankruptcy. That announcement follows on the heels of the Tops grocery chain bankruptcy filing last month. The grocer's debt is at least partially a result of being bought by hedge funds that in several cases have leveraged millions of dollars against the store. The next significant digit 100 sneakers. HQ Trivia, the mobile game show, and daily audition reel was recently struck a $3 million sponsorship deal with the upcoming Ready Player One movie and another deal with Nike. HQ will be hosting various games to go with the deals, including at least one with a $250,000 pot and another worth $100,000. There will also be a prize that money can't buy from 100 participants, which according to promo material is probably a pair of limited Air Max shoes. Okay, this comes to us from TheVerge.com. I don't know, maybe I'm getting old, but shoes, if they're not boots, I don't care. Moving on to the last significant digit, 22 million viewers. Sunday night's news show, 60 Minutes, had 22 million viewers Sunday night, its highest rating in nearly a decade. The draw? Stormy Daniels, the adult film star who alleged to have an affair with President Donald Trump. More people tuned in to the interview than watched either the Golden Globes or the Grammys this year. That comes to us from the New York Times. That is the official conclusion of the bulletin. I am now going to go back up through it and give you my footnotes to it. So, 22 million people decided to tune in to see what a porn star had to say about a 10-year-old affair that nobody cared about. Seriously, this is one of those situations that is being pushed by a certain segment of the media to continue the attack on President Trump. And believe me, folks, the guy does enough dumb stuff already. It's not like you need to find different things to attack him for. But to push this this adult film actress up to the point of saintliness is kind of disgusting. I gave the example yesterday of the film/musical Chicago. And yes, I do like film musicals. And you can fight me about that at 844-527-8723. I think it's very masculine. But the film/musical Chicago, when Roxy Hart is about to go to trial and her attorney, Billy Flynn, starts to do the makeover of making her wear modest clothes, teaching her how to knit so she can knit a little baby outfit, and trying to make her look saintly so she doesn't get the death penalty. The fact that Stormy Daniels has been risen or just propped up as a Me Too / saintly figure of Donald Trump's destruction is kind of just, it really shows you how pathetic we are as a culture that we are scraping. I'm sorry, Miss Stephanie Clifford, but you kind of are the bottom of the barrel at this point. You are an adult film actress. You do things on camera for money that are pretty terrible. And so now you're going to lecture us on what? You've even admitted that you're doing it for money. You said so in the interview that you're doing it for money. And you're dragging. Really, the thing, it's not Trump. I don't care about Trump, President Trump. The guy's kind of he's a dirty dude. we all know that. Guy's been married 3 times. You can't have 3 times. Can't have 3 divorces and three remarriages. Most of the time when he does get remarried, he remarries the girl that he cheated on the previous wife with. As Ben Shapiro points, we're very lucky that Stormy Daniels is not the first lady of the United States at this point. But we know his track record. This doesn't shock me. This doesn't scare me. This doesn't make me go, oh my goodness, I can't. On the list of things that Trump upsets me about, this is probably 1,405,000,000. I'm more upset about John Bolton being given access to the Oval Office than what Stormy Daniels had access to 10 years ago, over 10 years ago. And it's always these casualties of public life, but I really feel empathy for Barron, because Barron's going to grow up looking at these stories and dealing with these things, and that just has to wear on you. But the media don't care. Unless it's a Democrat, then kids are off limits, but they don't care about these kind of stories. How they impact, the collateral damage they happen. They have one thing, that is destroy the person in office by any means necessary. And the sad thing is, I think I looked at a poll this morning, President Trump's approval rating is the highest it's been at 42%. You know, there's enough dumb people that are like, well, the guy sleeps with porn stars, so I'll like him even more now. So it's 22 million people have nothing better to do on a Sunday night than to watch nothing. It's just reiteration of stuff that was already new. We just looked at her. I didn't look at her. I can't even look at her now. Sorry, Ms. Clifford. It's nothing against you. It's kind of just the whole thing you do. So yeah, that's super pathetic. Sorry, folks. I would actually have more respect for you if you watched the Grammys instead of this nonsense. 100 sneakers. Okay, if your life depends on getting a limited pair of Air Max shoes, you need to readjust your life. That's it. I can't really say anything else about that. It's unfortunate with the 94 stores that we are losing more and more grocery stores, local chains closing to bigger companies coming in. Maybe you're like me. I don't know if I'm at this point romanticizing the idea of a small town. I would love to get out of the DFW Metroplex at the first drop of a hat. I'm lucky I live in the greatest country in the world. That would be the Republic of Texas. That about an hour outside of me, to the north or to the south, you can get probably about 100 acres of land for less than $100,000. And that's my goal, man. I need to get out of the DFW Metroplex, and I need to get to one of those places where there's just nobody around me. One of those kind of people at this point. I live in a zero lot home, and it annoys me to no end. And I don't know how this connects to the 94% number, maybe because of the fact that it just seems like everything's becoming more homogenized and just standardized. There's nothing different from place to place. And this is just a continuation of that. And you get to find out that I just want to get out of here as soon as I can. Moving up to 63% hike. The problem with these laws is that at first they do some kind of immediate good. Oh, look, it's telling people that your price is about to go up. Okay. I bet you if you read into the actual law, there's a reason why that price is going to go up to that percent, and it has to do with something of that law. The more government gets involved in the health care industry, the worse it gets. Mike Church of the Mike Church Show has Dr. Wakezy, if I'm saying his last name right, odds are I'm not. He comes on the show often, and he talks about how the healthcare industry is a scam, it's a sham, and people just fall for it. We all do. Well, I have health insurance, not healthcare. But you have this 63% hike, and I guarantee you, if I got my hands on the law, you give me enough time, I'll show you that that 63% increase, some of it's due to having that law in effect. Yay, I get two more days before I get to tell the government how much they've taken from me in theft. Awesome. That's great. And you got to really feel bad for the people in Northern California. Northern California did not have a plan for such a fast-moving fire. They did not have evacuation plans. We all know, anybody that is somebody who doesn't live in California, the reason these fires are so bad is because they don't take the proper precautions. They don't clear the brush out, or they do clear the brush out, which allows these fires to spread to such a degree. And so there's the fact that the vacancy rate is just 1.5% of residential structures. That's pretty crazy. You are listening to the Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel, featuring King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. I'm going through my footnotes of the bulletin right now. If you want to give me your ideas or your critiques of these stories, give me a call at 844-527-8723. Hit me up on Facebook, facebook.com/Barrett Brief, or you can send me an email at barrettbrief@gmail.com. Not at Barrett Brief, just Barrett Brief, B-A-R-R-E-T-T, brief@gmail.com. All right. Arizona governor suspends Uber's ability to test self-driving cars. Hey, man, I'm on board. I don't like self-driving anything. I did an entire segment a couple months ago on how self-driving cars are not very smart. We all know my history of being wary of Flippy the Robot and all other kinds of automation. I'm not a big fan of it. I don't think it's a good idea when you have something like that. Yeah, 2% of me really likes the idea of a self-driving car so I could sleep on the way to work. But that doesn't really, I'm not going to give up my ability to drive to the to Skynet so they can drive me around. However, if you look at the actual crash and if you look at the initial findings, it doesn't matter if it was a self-driving car or not. The way that this woman approached the car in the dark, it would have been hard for anything to avoid it. Now, does it seem like an excuse for Governor Ducey to kind of bounce Uber out? Yeah, because it is kind of quick. But we're going to have to keep our eye on it and see where it goes. Moving on from my footnotes in the brief here in the Barrett Brief, here in the Crusade Channel. Science. Oh, Elon. Elon, Elon, Elon. You know. I'm starting to come around on him. I know. I've been very hard on him, and I've been very tough on the fact that I think his companies, because they're based with subsidies, they're kind of a fraud. But let me separate that, because the guy's just working the system. I can't get mad really that much at a guy who games a system that's rigged to let him succeed. But I don't want to talk about the business side of it. I mean, Elon Musk just seems like a kind of cool guy to hang around with. He seems like every day he's coming up with something. I'll make Lego bricks out of stone. And then the next day, I'm going to make a flamethrower. And then the next day, I'm going to shoot some rockets into space with a car on it. Every day, you just want to be sitting at the breakfast table waiting for him to show up and be like, all right, today I'm going to make a Tyrannosaurus Rex out of old plastic. What do you mean? How are you going to do it? Doesn't matter. I'm going to make it out of old plastic bottles, and it's going to roar and run at 60 miles an hour. And I'm going to power it with my batteries. Okay. And then he like puts one together, and then he shows everybody. Everybody pays him $1 million. And then he's like, all right, tomorrow I'm going to make glasses, not Google glasses. I'm going to make glasses out of paper. And this paper is going to be biodegradable after 4 days. So you have to buy new glasses every 5 days. Huh? What are you talking about? Don't worry, just buy it. And it just seems like every day he's coming up with stuff after stuff after stuff after stuff. And I get it. This stuff sounds pretty cool. Make Lego bricks that can build a home in a day or two. Well, I'm sure that most people in construction are not very happy about that. But it does have long-term ideas. But it just seems every day he's coming up with something new. And that's kind of fun. From a play standpoint, now, of course, actually implementing any of this stuff is ridiculous and would never work. But man, it's got to be a lot of fun just to watch him go. Like, does somebody wake up and go to his bed and turn the little key behind him and just kind of wind him up and then just let him go? Because the way he comes out with stuff, I'm going to make a flamethrower today. And it's going to be legal in the middle of the most heated gun control debate in the last 20 years. The dude's like, who wants a flamethrower? You know, he's like yogurt from Spaceballs. The kids love this one. And people are like, hey, that's cool, man. Yeah, you can make a flamethrower. Can't have a semi-automatic weapon, but hey, this dude wants to sell you a flamethrower for $500. Sometimes you got to sit back and just watch him. Okay. Just let him run. Just let the Musk run free. Let him do what he's got to do. And comes back. I'm going to make a computer out of all paper. And that paper is going to be I don't know why I'm on paper. I can't think like Elon Musk. So I'm just coming up with the most ridiculous things. I'm going to make a car that is run on rubber. It's going to run on rubber. It's going to be a couple rats in the back, and they're going to run. And it's going to go 60 miles an hour. Oh, okie doke. Let's see what you got. Lots of fun to watch Elon Musk every day come up with stuff. And he's just like, duh, dude, it's made out of rocks. So of course it's biodegradable. Like, you're just dumb that you didn't even think of that. Thanks, buddy. Anyway, that's my thoughts on Elon Musk announcing Lego-like bricks that can build homes in a day or two. You are listening to the Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel, featuring king-size truth from radio-size speakers. I'm going through the bulletin. I just talked about Elon Musk and his new Lego-like bricks. Want to know what you think? 844-527-8723. Moving on to U.S. citizens, U.S. adding the actual citizenship question in 2020. How is this even a controversy? I understand that California and other, well, most likely California, their entire lifeblood is dependent on illegal immigrants and the amazingness that they are. Now, let's separate this. Let's take this and separate it. Am I mad or am I trying to talk back negatively about illegal immigrants? No. I've worked with them here in the state of Texas, believe it or not. There's times where I interact with them, knowingly or unknowingly. Now, as individuals and as people, I agree and I see why they're here. I can't, as somebody who wants to be intellectually honest, allow... I don't want to say allow, but I can't sit here and say, well, it's fine that you're breaking the law. because you're good people. Of course, that's, as I've explained in previous shows, it's a combination of the fact that the immigration, customs enforcement and immigration and so forth, the process of getting through is terrible, expensive, slow, doesn't work, is not fruitful. So, of course, people are just going to skip it. Of course, the people that are waiting, this kind of stuff upsets me. And yes, people that partake in goods and services of the country should be tolerated or should be known. Well, it could cost us seats in the House. Well, then you shouldn't have your state be like a, it shouldn't just be open free for all for whoever you want to come over the border. I'm sorry, that just doesn't work. And if you, it's either this, you either agree with the federal law or you shut your face when the census time comes. Oh yeah, 20 million people live in your state. 18 million of them are citizens. Sorry. I know I'm being very generous. You're going to lose a House seat. What do you want? You want to have an open border? That's fine. It's going to have to happen this way. It can't be both. And that's the problem. Everybody wants both. Excuse me. And when you have these things, this decision comes at a time when we've seen xenophobic and anti-immigration policy positions from this administration. Well, Kristen Clark, asking somebody who lives in the United States and who sends their kids to public schools and drives on public roads and goes to emergency rooms and gets taken care of by doctors with U.S. educations. Yeah, I want to know if they're an immigrant. Yeah, I do. Sorry. I know it's xenophobic to ask, hey, person that's using up space that doesn't really pull into the system. Well, they pay their taxes. Well, they're not paying enough. They're a net negative on the economy and on the general dynamic of the country. I'm living in fear. Well, obviously you're living in fear because you have something to fear because you're here illegally. Go try that nonsense in Mexico. They'll put you in jail right away. Go try that nonsense almost anywhere in the world except for Germany. The fact that we argue for, you know, we say we're a rule of law, we're based on the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. But yet we openly defy, whether it's in Colorado and Washington and other states with marijuana policy or in places like California with sanctuary cities. And then we throw temper tantrums when the Commerce Department goes, yeah, we actually want to have an accurate count of who's a U.S. citizen and who's not. And then shut up. One or the other. Have an open border. That's fine. You're going to pay for it when we do the census. It's that simple. And you can hear my frustration dealing with this nonsense because it is. This is one thing that should not be a debate. It's not anti-immigrant to ask somebody if they are a U.S. citizen or at least have proof of living here. If you can show me you have a green card, yellow card, green, purple card, I don't care. Oh, you hate me because I'm an immigrant. No, if you're an immigrant and you can prove that you're here, I don't care. Go run free. I'll release you into the field with Elon Musk. See what you two guys can come up with. But if you're here illegally, don't complain when we're asking for citizenship. Don't you can't be counted in the census. You can't be counted in how the functions of government are set up because you aren't participating in it. Yeah. Maybe I'm just stupid. I don't know. 844-527-8723. Tell me I'm stupid. This is the Bear Brief here on the Crusade Channel featuring King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. If you live in California, A, I'm sorry, and B, call me. Tell me what you think about that. 844-527-8723. Largest Catholic church in the world is not where you expect. I think that's pretty cool. I don't think I'll ever go travel to see it, but I think it's pretty cool. Moving on. That's all I got to say about that. Here we go. Australia gun control advocates call for federal intervention to save their firearms pact. Oh, it's delicious. It's so delicious. I love it. Because every single time there's a gun control debate, some little ignoramus, either from Australia or supposedly from Australia, or some gun-grabbing idiot here in the United States says, well, you know, Australia had a gun back, and now their crime is fine. It don't work no more. Cause why can't we be like Australia? Apparently, Australia doesn't want to be like Australia. And I'm going to break this down into multiple parts. Of course, we have the shady, nefarious NRA-style gun lobby that is apparently five guys sitting in a room with some cigar smoke surrounding them going, ha, 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 what are we going to do now? Yeah, see, now we're going to bring some guns back into Australia, see? Yeah, we're going to pay off some of these lobbyists, see? And then on the other side, you have these angelically portrayed gun control lobby. What are the guns? Here's an interesting question, my little gun control advocates, the Gun Control Association or Gun Control Australia, GCA. If guns have, if the referendum has been, I'm not the referendum, if the historic PAC has essentially been ignored for almost 20 years, where is the massive gun violence? Yeah. Where are the mass shootings and where are the, you know, where are the Doc Holidays and all the other Wild West advocacies and things that you told us were being prevented by this magical pact or this magical agreement, the National Firearms Agreement? You told us, I'm being lectured every day about how Australia's gun laws need to be mimicked because they're so successful. When people in Australia don't believe it. Jeff Goldblum said, life finds a way. Terrible impression, I know. But people find a way. Yeah. And it shows you the path of the March for Our Lives will take. Eventually. The law that was signed into, the law that Florida Governor Rick Scott signed about the background checks and the lowering, the raising of the age to 18, all these other kinds of stuff, all the gun control stuff. It's going to get repealed in the next 10 years. Somebody's going to come along and say, I'm going to repeal that. And they're going to win in a landslide and the Florida House will repeal it. Any kind of gun control policy, just like the assault weapons ban in 1994, eventually that petered out. It went away. Any gun control that is proposed by the Parkland 5 and the March for Our Lives will go away. Sorry, David Boss Hogg. You can talk about the revolution all you want. Revolution ain't happening. Not here. And if there is going to be a revolution, unless you're going to be fighting me with a squirt gun, ain't going to go that well for you. But the fact is, it's actually quite interesting because the way we are told here in America that this firearms agreement happened, everybody gave their guns, flowers bloomed, the sun opened up from the clouds, money fell from the heaven, the waterways filled up with oil, natural gas, and water, and all the greatest things ever happened in Australia happened. Ooh, wait a minute. You mean you're telling me that parts of the country are not following it because they think it's dumb and there's no need to follow it? That's very interesting. I only say that because it's completely true. Think about it, folks. They have told us that this is the way to go. And yet, 20 years in, the people who are supposed to be leading the example are like, yeah, this thing's just stupid. It's amazing. Propaganda. And how things are just completely ignored. The reason why this isn't working, the reason why the National Firearms Agreement doesn't work, the fact that they're still doing buybacks in Australia, by the way. They didn't get rid of all the guns when it happened. They're still doing buybacks. The reason why it doesn't work is because the black market for firearms in Australia is huge. It also connects to the recent influx of migrants from the Middle East. They are bringing firearms into the country. There's a huge gun culture within the newly brought Muslim migrants. Now, calm down. Hold on. It's just something that happens. Okay? I'm not trying to be anti-Muslim or any blah, 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 blah. It's just something that happens. So you see that it doesn't work. Laws do not work. You cannot legislate morality out. I'm going to keep my eye on this because this is the argument that's being used to push away natural rights, to use government supremacy over the individual. And this is a clear example that that does not work. You are listening to the Barrett Brief here in the Crusade Jam, featuring King Size Truth and Radio Size Speakers. Going through the bulletin right now, just talked about how Australia's National Firearm Agreement isn't really working, and how gun control advocates are begging the government to actually make it a federal memorandum or federal law, federal referendum to ensure that it happens. All right, business news. U.S. seeks trade China trade moves on autos and so forth. I mentioned it a little bit at the first part. Everybody freaked out with the tariffs.
We're going to lose.
The usual suspects ran around with their hair on fire. Chickens with their head cut off. A lot of people just should have waited. What's going to happen here? You could see as soon as the thing happened that that Trump was willing to negotiate and stuff. Canada, Mexico, you get 30 days. Everybody was getting an exception, I guess. I guess the idea behind the tariffs was to reset the table, at least from a business perspective. Because one thing, and I've noticed this actually from a personal incident in my life, it's very easy to tell somebody you're going to do something. It's another reaction when you actually do it. I guess it's very easy for the other country to say, Trump's going to tell us he's going to renegotiate, blah, blah, blah. I doubt he's going to do it because the Republicans in Congress and the national media and people will tell him not to do it. But then he did it. And so everybody went, okay, well, if it's going to actually happen, maybe he'll sit down and talk to us about certain things here and there. And it looks like he is. I don't know. We have to act just like everything else. Just like everything else with Trump. We got to wait it out. We got to see what happens. Too many people in our culture are so quick with the instant judgments. The quick takes. The hot takes. Oh, Trump is putting tariffs on China. We're all going to die. Oh, Trump is going to, well, except with Bolton. Bolton's a terrible thing. My quick take on that is correct. Count it. Everybody else's quick takes are terrible, but mine are gold. Except for the Austin serial bomber, which I was completely wrong on. We won't go there. The Chinese-U.S. trade moves. We saw it yesterday with the South Koreans. Tit for tat. A little back and forth. Is it a good thing? Yes. Is it going to move the world? Is it going to do anything? No. This is another thing that will allow President Trump to win re-election. Because he will go on the campaign trail and say, I'm not going to do the impression. I went out and I renegotiated with China and I renegotiated with South Korea and I was able to get us back on even trades with better deals. And everybody was like, I literally almost joked trying to do my crowd noise. So excuse me. And everybody will cheer. How about that? I'll say that so I don't choke on it. That's what happens when I try to do sound effects, folks. For you, for your enjoyment. I almost choke on stuff. What? Don't worry about that. Everybody will go nuts. The red hats will fly. MAGA, MAGA, MAGA. And it'll be great. So, hey, he's doing these. Will it work? Maybe. Like everything else, with any president, any administration, any law, being a historian, what do I tell you? Wait. You cannot do instant... you can't do instant takes with stuff that takes time to produce and flesh out. You are listening to the Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel, featuring King Size Truth and Radio Size Speakers, going through stories from the bulletin. And I want to know what you think. Give me a call at 844-527-8723. Next, Mattis being isolated by the mustachioed one, John Bolton. I'm just going to continue it. John Bolton should not be anywhere near the executive office. The guy is a dork of an intellectual, He's Yale educated, but that doesn't mean anything to me anymore. He's the guy that got beat up in high school, and now that he has the keys to the car, he's going to blow everybody up because of it. I don't really care. So you have a guy like Mattis, who I'm, the stories on Mattis vary greatly. I know Suzanne Sherman, when she had the Suzanne option here on the Crusade channel, she had a person who served under Mattis, and he was not very impressed with him. And that was a very interesting angle to hear, because there are other people who have served, who are still serving in the Marines, who I respect highly, that speak glowingly about him. So it's like everything else. People have different opinions. Out of the two, once again, my hot takes, always correct, never incorrect. Mattis will outlast Bolton. I give Bolton a year, tops. He may agree with Trump on policy, but the guy is so bellicose. The guy is, he's so oversure of himself that in a setting between him and Trump, I can't see him lasting more than a year. I just can't. Unless he's that crazed to be a part of the administration, that he's so desperate to be in the circle to make these decisions, that he would subjugate himself to not having his opinion thought. I don't know Bolton. I've only heard him when he used to be on Red Eye with Greg Gutfeld. And he was so goofy back then with his mustache. And was, hey, we're gonna go, we should go blow up. Who are you going to go blow up, buddy? Okay. Who are you going to go blow up? Because I don't see you grabbing a weapon and standing a post. I see you ordering people to do so. And that's the kind of guy you are. And that's the thing that scares me the most. Now, I'm not all about having generals in there, but between Mattis and between Bolton, I think Bolton doesn't make it. He gets in there. All it takes is him messing up once. He's the kind of guy that can't, he doesn't shy away from a camera. He's kind of like Trump in that regard, that he doesn't shy away from a camera. He likes spotlight, likes to have his opinion validated. He'll be on Fox News regularly. Doesn't look good for him. Of course, this could be wishful thinking on my part, because I want him out of the White House as soon as possible. I don't want him in the White House. I don't want him in Washington, D.C. In fact, I don't want him on the East Coast because he's a nut job. Seriously, folks. Whoever, and you see these people on social media, John Bolton is the greatest, but he's going to be great. No, he's not. Stop it. No, he is not. But let's hope that Mattis can keep his nose clean and stay there. I don't know why I'm saying that. Who cares? If he leaves, he leaves. Bolton, I hope he leaves sooner. The Barrett Brief here on the Crusade channel, 844-527-8723. Give me a call. Let me know what you think. Finally, the last part of the brief is the headline of the strong possibility of Kim Jong-un in Beijing. I don't think it's Kim. We'll see. It's probably his sister. His sister is the international rock star now. She's kind of like the Ivanka Trump, as they were told, blah, 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 blah. I could see him sending her. I don't see in my analysis of Kim as a guy who would actually go on the train, because I don't think he trusts anybody at this point. He is so isolated because of his age. He never wanted to, well, he never, I don't want to say it like that. You can talk about a guy who was ill-prepared for the job in every way, shape, and form. The guy was absolutely ill-prepared for the job. So much, in fact, that the propaganda tape, if you can ever, or the propaganda film, if you can ever see it, post Kim Jong-il's death, is amazing. It is, well, it's amazing in how terrible it is. I'll try to set the scene for you. The most memorable part is the opening, when it's just this, it's a hill. It's very well, the cinematography is okay. It's set up. There's just this rolling hill. And then there's this crescendo of music. And then all of a sudden you see Kim Jong-un riding in on a horse. I'll let that sink in. He comes in riding on a horse to save the day, because they had, the military had, and the government had to do that because nobody had heard of him. In fact, nobody knew of him until his father died. And the fact that his older brother was kind of like a weirdo and so forth. He was brought in with little military experience, with little respect, and he has, and that has led to his mass executions and his shuffling of administrative posts and so forth, to the point that I could not see him leaving Pyongyang because he would be afraid that something would happen in his absence. Two, I do agree with some of them, the actual North Korean analysts, that he's also young enough and narcissistic enough that he would not, he would not do things in a quiet manner. He would not do them in a subtle way. That's the word. He would not do it in a subtle way. So if anything, it is a chance for the North Koreans to try and shore up support with the Chinese, who are their pretty much their only ally left. And we'll see how it goes. But it's his sister. His sister is there. We're going to find out it's his sister. Bloomberg's going to be wrong. I'm going to be right. And you heard it here first here on the Crusade Channel on the Bear Brief. That's right. Because my hot takes, always correct. Never incorrect. I am going to address this article real quick from a Gallup poll or Gallup article that is, let me see. Why your best teachers are leaving and four ways to keep them. We're not going to go into the four ways to keep them. I'm just going to concentrate on the why your best teachers are leaving. This article struck home to me because, you know, I left a couple years ago, so I must have been ahead of the curve. The article starts, will the talented teachers in your district extend their contracts for another year? The chances are good that your high talent teachers are on the lookout for other job opportunities. Gallup research shows that almost half the teachers, that's 48% in the U.S., say they are actively looking for a different job now or watching for opportunities. At the beginning of the 2017-2018 year, almost every U.S. state had a shortage of teachers in major subject areas. According to the Learning Policy Institute, the economics of the teacher shortage are somewhat clear. The demand for teachers is growing because of strict requirements for requirements on teacher-to-student ratios and increasing student enrollments in public schools. Meanwhile, teacher supply is diminishing because fewer people are enrolling in teacher preparation programs in college and current teachers are leaving the profession. Let me address that. I love the Republic of Texas. It's my home. It's very easy to become a certified teacher in Texas. You take the test and that's it. So when they say there is a shortage of teaching, well, it's because teachers are treated like crap in the United States. let's be honest here. The idea that teaching is a profession you would want to go in, especially nowadays, is laughable. The education system has been looked at as A, babysitter, and B, a fix-all. And now it's C, a social experiment. You as a teacher are being asked to do things that you did not sign up for. You have to be a psychologist. You have to be a support system, you have to be an educator, you have to be all these things that you don't A, know how to do, B, want to do, and C, are not getting paid for. And yeah, money's not everything, but when you're getting paid $32,000 a year to do all these jobs, and you're working 70 to 75 hours a week, yeah, you're going to be like, maybe I should get paid a little more. The article continues, these market forces and the growing national teacher shortages are challenging districts to rethink and focus on their human capital strategies. Some states have turned to drastic measures to fill these educator role by hiring college graduates without a teacher certification or formal teaching experience. Okay, well, the second one is like a bartending job. You can't get experience without teaching. However, with these dramatic headlines and statistics, viability exists, and some districts are thriving despite blah, blah, blah. Okay. Essentially, the more schools are going to be turned into propaganda wings, obviously, because before it was kind of like, a little wink and a nod, like, yep, maybe. Now it's completely out there. Everybody knows. This is how districts are going to be treated. You know, you are going to enforce these policies. You are going to enforce bathrooms with different genders. You're going to be allowed to have kids be 15 different genders whenever they want. And you're going to see a lot of people just be like, nope, I'm done. See ya. And we'll see it continue. And I'm actually good with that. Let's see. Homeschool your kids. Private school your kids. Get them out of the system. The system will fall on itself eventually because it's not built for this. As a former teacher who left, get them out. Get out now. All right, finally. Here on the Bear Brief. on the Crusade Channel featuring King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. I'm going to close out the show with the world famous You've Gotta Be Kidding Me, where we look at stories from across the world now, and we think to ourselves, you gotta be kidding me. Turning, we were in Oregon yesterday for the man who was fighting the McDonald's because they would not make him 30 double cheeseburgers. But today, we go to New Zealand, who desperately wants to be like everybody else, but can't. Headline, Russian spies kicked out of 20 countries, but not New Zealand, because it can't find any. New Zealand summoned the Russian ambassador to give him a formal dressing down, as other countries did with their Russian envoys, but announced it has no plans to kick out any spies. The reason is they cannot find any. While other countries have announced they are expelling undeclared Russian intelligence agents, officials have advised there are no individuals here in New Zealand who fits this profile, to New Zealand's Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern. If there were, we would have already taken action. We remain steadfast with our international partners in our shared concern about the Salisbury nerve agent attack. New Zealand's Foreign Affairs Minister Winston Peters added that the country is keeping possible future actions under review, but did not say what those would be. Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs repeatedly condemned the joint move against the staff. However, has not taken any practical measures against the country this week. It is New Zealand. Unless they're scouting out for like the next Lord of the Rings movie, I don't really see the strategic importance. I do love the fact that New Zealand tried so hard to be barreling. We're going to kick them out. Where are they? We can't find them. So apparently the best Russian spies were put in New Zealand because nobody knows where those suckers are. Man, that is so great. Thank you, New Zealand, because you got to be kidding me. And that concludes today's brief, the Barrett Brief here on the Crusade Channel featuring King Size Truth from Radio Size Speakers. I do want to thank Mark Noonan, the co-author of The Worst President in History, for being good with me and coming on tomorrow to join me on the program despite technical difficulties. I'm Rick Barrett, and in the words of Mother Angelica, I am no punching bag. Grace and peace to all of you.